بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إن شاء الله عبد القادر سأبرك في رحمة الله من دون تشتري دلي وصلك a central place. So in and around Delhi you'll find madrasas, institutes, so he went. Delhi was not so spread out at that time, so he came up to Delhi. In that zamana they went the Darul Iqama, a boarding facility. Now, with every madrasa there is a boarding facility. So in that age and time, there wasn't a boarding facility. So people would find a masjid. In India, the masjids aren't like our masjids. They are small masjids. And plentiful masjids. Like in the whole Deoband, there would have been about 110 masjids in this one town, 110 masjids. So the masjid will have a small room. So students that are wanting to study, they will find a masjid. And they will rest at the masjid and they will offer some service to the masjid. So when they offer a service to the masjid, the masjid will take care of them. Basic things will take care of, for example, meals, etc., they will take care. Or they will do the azan, or they will clean up, or they will do the imamat. And in exchange for that, they'll get something small. So he saw a masjid, and he saw that one of the trustees of the masjid was blind, and he needed someone to bring him to the masjid and take him back home in exchange for some rotis. So, alright, she'll get about two or three rotis, and he must escort the blind person to the masjid and to home, to the home on his return. Not too many days after that, another student came up. Now, the students in those days were quite different. The outlook was different. So Mullah says to the student, you see, there's so many masjids in the whole of Delhi and all are taken up. And this masjid, well, I'm here. If you want, you can join in. And the food, well, I'm getting two or three rotis. I'll take half, you take half. Now, the students' outlook was different. The outlook was that we came here for deen, so we need to see that we're doing things correctly. So in the entire duration, he made a resolve with Allah Ta'ala that I'm not going to ask anybody for any help. I need to ask Allah Ta'ala, but I'm not going to. I'll do some work and get a salary for that, but I'm not going to ask anybody for anything. Alhamdulillah, you get those type of children even now. Some parts of the world, there is a madrasa fee to pay, and they don't have the fee. So they will go to the authority of the madrasa, and they say, alright, we'll do some work, and that must be our fee for our stay. So they say, alright, do this work here. For example, you will see that the sarkhan is laid out, or you will see that the place is swept, or something like that. They'll give him a job, and he'll say, whatever you're supposed to be giving me, that must be counted as a fee. So you get that student who is diligently doing this type of thing. And he doesn't want to live in a hangout. He doesn't want to be asking anybody for any help. So now, that type of student gets a maximum barakat in his study, because his nazar is not on people. His mind is not on people's gifts. His mind is on Allah Ta'ala only. Whatever I get from this, this will supplement my study. Now this is so important. you know, some business people here, accountants and other business people here some time back. So I just asked them, as a matter of curiosity, I asked them, see, if all South Africans, for example, were absolutely content, and say, that we'll just live within our means, we will not live beyond our means. We can afford a car for 50,000, we'll buy for 50,000. We can afford something for 1 million, we'll buy for 1 million. But we're not going to live beyond our means. Same with buying any house, a building, or going for a holiday, or going for Hajj Umrah. We'll just live according to our means, nothing beyond our means. So see, everybody makes up their mind that we're not going to beg, we're not going to ask, we'll live within our means, we will not indicate to anybody that I need some help. No. I just want to live according to my means. So if everybody makes up his mind to be living within his means, I ask them, see, you know, Durban, for example, got about 30 banks. Say 50 banks he's got, right? So he's got 50 banks, and everybody has programmed his mind to live just within his means. So how many banks will be left? So what I count is possibly none. Otherwise, maybe one or two, because you know, you need to do business. So when you're doing business overseas, then you need to send money across, right? So normally use the banks to send the money across, right? This bank will send it to that bank. Or if they are importing something, they need to send money across, so their bank will send it to your bank and you will receive the payout in that manner. So just for the imports and export convenience, perhaps there may be a one or two bank. Otherwise, there won't be the need for a bank. All will have to close. So then I explained to those businessmen and those accountants that means the banks are living out of your greed. They're living out of your greed. So they will entice you, and they will entice you, and say, no, don't worry, you can pay over 5 years, etc., so you get enticed. So then you live beyond your means. When you live beyond your means, and you're buying things that you would not normally afford cash. So now then you have to use them. Now then you get into an chakkar. Now you bought a car, that's also, you purchase it from the bank, and then you want to buy some furniture, you saw nice furniture, you want to buy that, you bought it from the bank. Then you saw some good appliances, fridge, stove, etc. You're buying it off the bank. So you saw it so easy. Then, but at the end of the month, you see now, see, you owe 10,000 rand, 3,000 rand towards the car, then 2,000 rand towards the house, 1,000 rand towards the appliance. Now what you left with? 5,000 rand. Then in the course of the year, 2 years, whatever, then if you couldn't pay it, then they're going to just take back the car or take back the house, they're going to take it back from you. What you left with? You left with that thing. So you may well say, wait, then you can't live in this country if you're not going to work with the banks, then you're not going to be living in the country. So nobody, a lot of people lived, and they're still living. And how they live is they live within their means. You can't buy a car for a 500,000 or 1 million. Nobody's stopping you to buy a car for, say, 50,000. You can't afford that. But then you say, what do people say, and how will they look at me? Right? Leave what people have to say. And number two is, you will just use it for work. And long distance, you don't use it for. Short distance, here to Durban and back, that car is all right. But now, you know, use it for a long distance here to Maritzburg, it may have problems. It's a cheap car, you can't do that. There, you sit in a public transport or something, and you do the work and come back. Right? So you will live within your means. Within your means, you have no problem. you have money at the end of the month, and then apart from having money, you feel so relieved. Mind is, it's relieved, it's at ease, you're not worried about the creditor, and you're not worried about your loan, you're having a peaceful sleep. Here you're worried, I have to give a big chunk of my salary away, and if I don't, this will happen. If I borrow the money from a person, because I'm already into the habit of borrowing, then I may meet him in namaz, and what he'll talk about me, what he'll say about me. And I must escape him, I must just see my father and run away quickly so he doesn't see me. And if he sees me and he asks me, then what must I say? And if he phones me, reminds me about the credit, then? So all these type of worries will fill my mind. I have a troublesome mind, I won't be able to sleep right, I will feel uneasy. Then apart from that, and because my mind is troubled, right? You pay so much, my mind is troubled, so I won't be an easy person at home. So, my mind is troubled because of the debts. To pay him 5,000, 2,000, 3,000. But because of that, I've got a troubled mind. Now, when I've got a troubled mind, then I may react in a very, very strange way. Sometimes, I'll see, Lord, how to rob this person here so I can sort myself out. How to speak a lie there that I can sort myself out, right? Or how to take the money and escape from the scene. Make a false promise and then escape from the scheme. How to create a false investment and attract people, get about 30 million and run away. So my mind will think in very strange and unique ways. That will be the one problem. Second problem is if I'm going to stay here put with the problems, now my mind is all loaded with worries and anxiety. When it's loaded with anxiety and worries, then I'll be a troubled person. When I'm a troubled person, then the smallest of things will irritate me. I'm coming home, I'm going to pick up a fight with the wife, with the child, with someone in the workplace, someone in the masjid, someone outside the masjid, but I want to pick a fight with someone. Why? Because the mind is very irritating. I don't have a calm, relaxed mind, so I'm very irritable. And very irritable, then I am taking out on the musalli, at home, with the wife, at the workplace, in the business, somewhere or the other, I am just taking it out. Frustrating, see. Then at the third level what happens, then the children feel afraid of me. They see you, there's a monster coming again, hey, just be careful. Just be very careful. You don't know how are you going to respond. But where it started from where you want to live beyond your means. And you learn to live according to your means. You don't have so much of lavish food, simple living, right? Simple car. So you had no overheads. You had no overheads, you had nothing to worry about. You didn't need to steal, didn't need to fight, didn't need to take interest, didn't need to run away from dealing in fraud, etc. You didn't need to do all these things here. You could have lived a relaxed and a comfortable life, you could have done it. But no, you want to live a little bit of a high life. You want people to see you differently. You want all those type of comforts. Then this is where you are leading yourself to, you see. So, Shah Abdul Qadir Sabrah said, no, we don't want to ask anybody. We'll work. We'll work, we'll earn, and we'll supplement our living here in the madrasa. They worked. You can. If you look for a work, you find some work. Now you may think, oh, I'm going to be sweeping, so what will people talk of me? But you don't think of that. You know, we teach a lot of this new Muslims coming into Islam, right? So we impress on them by doing honest living. Even if it is you have to sweep, even if it is you have to wash a car, even if it is that you have to look up someone's garden, but earn an honest living, there will be a lot of barakat in that. So we keep advising them. Some days back, one person came, black Muslim, South African Zulu speaking. So he said, no, I went by Abba's advice, I do my work. Now, alhamdulillah, I own 30 taxis. I own 30 taxis. But you see, it's an honest living, straight. He's not very, very educated, maybe grade 7, grade 8, but he learned the hard way, doing an errand here, doing something here, doing something here. He built himself. Now he's owning 30 taxis. See that? One person came and told me last month, he says, one taxi, one that Kumbi, you know, this Kumbi, about half a million. So you can imagine now what his assets may be and what he's turning around. See? But there is a way to do it. But I said, I must go like the whole world is doing. The whole world is going in one way, then I must go with that, otherwise there's no place for me. You want to crook, you want to rob, you want to cheat, you want to do something, and play around. One person, you got this person here, right? One person now, you know, he wants to earn money, but he don't want his comfort to be dented. His comfort must be normal, you know. He was studying here. For 6 months or 7 months he studied and he went to him. Now he got a bit of knowledge for 7 months. So he got to work in rainbow chicken. But the mind is off. See, the mind is off, then it makes you do different things. So he's got to work in rainbow chicken as a slaughterer. Right? So when rainbow chicken was functioning, now it's closed, I think. So I asked him how the holidays function. So you get about 3 weeks or 4 weeks in the year. And then the sick leave. So now what we do, every worker has got about 10 days. He's allowed 10 days of sick leave. Right? Every worker is allowed 10 days of sick leave. So in our change room, we got a calendar, you see. So say there are 10 slaughterers. So he will say, this 10 days are my sick leave. He will say, these 10 days are my sick leave. It's all worked out in the calendar. Accordingly, that Tarjeeb they work. But you see what happens. When you want to live beyond your means, now your rosy, your food, everything is contaminated. Can there be barakat in that? And you're stealing from someone's time. You think you're doing a wonderful thing, but now see how they worked it out. When they worked it out that way, it worked for them, but I ask you, is the money now contaminated or not contaminated? So you live a simple life, you can. You know, make it happen, you can make it happen. But now you stress, I must have it like that. Then you will do funny things, just to see that number or whatever, you will see funny things, right? Now, it's one of his private hospitals, right? So you got, so I'm showing how it works. And you made up your mind now, I must get this money so that I can buy this type of a motor car and that type of an investment and that type of a holiday, right? So I must make, at the end of the month, I must make about at least a million, right? So now, talk of real stories, right? Real stories where people have got involved, right? So they go, the wife is expecting children, they go to the hospital. So the gynae doesn't do a proper checkup. Now as the day of the delivery comes now, if she puts the patient on a normal delivery, she may get about 10,000, right? But now she'll put him onto a Caesar. Now you see there's a look in the scan and all that, and there is the cord around the neck. You risk the child's life, it's all right, it's left to you. Now at that time, everybody is in a panic state. And he's in a panic state, and he knows, if I'm going to do a normal delivery, it'll take half hour, and a caesarean will take, say, about another 15 minutes to 45 minutes, right? But in a caesarean, for that one patient, I'll get 30,000. You have 10,000, 30,000. So they'll book the patient for the caesarean and get him done. But you see what happens. It's not only a guy in here. I'm showing you now the patients that come and report, right? One person has some small chest pain. So he booked himself in one private hospital. So in 2 hours time, a cardiologist that's at the hospital says, right, we have to book you in for the open heart surgery. Get ready. Now it's half past 10, so by 1 o'clock we'll start. So now he phoned around to doctors of his friends, say, let's hold it, let me go home and think about it. He went for a second opinion, we don't need a surgery. You are not in that state that you need to. But now, if he is going to book in for that, then you have to cough out so much, half a million, for that surgery. Right? Now, this person has worked it out that I need so much of money for the month to be able to run my businesses. So, how must I make it? I must make it through the patients. See, what happens? See, all these crooked things start off at this point where your whole goal, your whole outlook is money. Then you want to rob this person here, cheat that person here, mislead that person. One doctor came in here. He specialized, so he had a kurta and he had a topi. So I'm thinking to myself, Allah forgive me for that. And that's all he's not a freelancing, a rainbow colleague or something, right? But I was really impressed about his iman and his truth and honesty. I was impressed. So he says, I specialized and I found a job with a cartel of doctors. 8, 9, the old practice, the clientele is established, we just fit in very nice. So I fitted in nicely. Now, because I'm new, I couldn't forward the entire capital to be an equal member. So they asked me to do some extra duties, like the weekends, etc. They will take off, and I'll be working. All right. But see, he's telling me I'm feeling very troubled. So I asked him, what happened? He says, here I'm a doctor. I specialized. I practice in the government sector as well as the private sector. I know about these things here, flu, all the symptoms and what is to be done, right? You give a vitamin tablet and whatever else. Just 2-3 basic things you give and the patient must have a good rest, enough. Now, that capital of man, see, I'm charging that patient about 150, 200 rands and it's out. He has a rest and he's right. So the cartel is shouting me. He says, how do you expect us to be able to service our lifestyle? See, we've got cars, we've got homes, we've got holidays, we've got private studies, all these things we've got. How must we service our lifestyle? If you want to carry on with this, 150, 200, I'm going to study. You must give him one spray, give him something else, an injection, whatever else, line him up and charge him 1,000 rand. So, when you charge him so much, then we've got so much more at hand, we can service our lifestyle. I'm scratching here now, there's poor people coming here, average class, a very few wealthy class. But I must fleece them like this just to service my lifestyle. Is that in keeping with the truth of my profession? Then he tells me, all right, see, because I volunteered to do the weekend work, long weekends, etc. So they asked me to go and see 1-2 patients at the hospital. So there was a child about 9 years of age, and he was in hospital, to go to the private hospital to go check the child. So I saw the child running about, playing, jumping, everything normal. I checked his pressure, everything I checked up, like how the doctor would see. So everything normal. I gave a card, he would go out. Oh, the way they shouted, they came on me like a ton of bricks. You will carry your lens, you have to close up, man. So I just booked him in for 10 days, I freed him for the second day. So keep him for every day's checkup, for at least got 500 rands. So checked him up first day, second day, third day, Kari gave him medication here, there, all. Kept him for 10 days, and you could have fleeced him so much. Now you, like a clever thing, you just say, how are you going to run? I said, Mom, my conscience is really troubling me. Now, what do I do? See? So the respect for professionalism is gone. Where the concern for halal is, when that thing goes, then the respect goes. Then the respect is for the money. The respect is not for the profession. The respect is for the money, how to earn that money. Under some pretexts, get this thing here, get that thing done, and book him in. It doesn't really have to happen with doctors, accountants, anybody will do the same thing. How to get that extra from the client, how to get it, how to make it work. Yeah. So anyway, I told him, you'd rather leave the job. He came after a week or something. But what I enjoyed of him was true. He was truthful, he was honest. He said, "Well, I don't think I've managed leaving the world." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, when I booked in with them, I saw the package. So I bought a car on credit, I bought an apartment on credit, I bought this thing on credit. Now I need the money. If I get out from here, then how am I going to see the installments?" See, you see this vicious circle, right? Where it comes from? It comes from the tamā, the greed, you see. The greed comes in, and the greed makes you do a lot of things. So the respect is gone after that. Now people get to know what's happening here. I ask you, will they respect these people? Respect is gone, khalas, the respect is gone. So many cases you get like this, doctors coming in, normal people coming in. One person came in here, so also he's a specialist, right? So he had to be in one, I don't say the hospital name. He said, "Hey, man, I hands up. Private hospital, but I say I give up. The doctor is telling me." He's still learning to be a specialist. So I said, "What happened?" He said, "Right, you know, I will be in the hospital from this time to this time. And as I'm leaving, then I will give the chart to the nurse that's in charge. She will see to all, everything's worked out. You know, look at the pressure, sugar, heart, all that, whatever else. You must see it till I come the next morning. Next morning I'll come at about 9 o'clock. But till then everything must be done." All right. So he comes at 9 o'clock. So he reads the chart. Everything is all right. Till 11 o'clock everything is right. In the meanwhile, the doctor picked up that the patient died at 2 o'clock in the morning. See that? So, in which alam he was doing the checking, I don't know. Alam al-dunya, alam al-barzakh. Where he was doing all of this. But you see what happens. See, there's greed. There's greed. This is the thing, this is a killer. You will cheat, you will rob, everything, just to see those numbers. Just to see that number. Now you get, in this Durban turnoff, get paramedics, right? Two or three waiting there. And they're fighting. 3 months ago, one fought the other, one person killed the other person, right? Not here, somewhere else, right? One person fought and they killed. You got four trucks, you're always one fighting another. That's my territory. You can't come into my territory. But you see, when this greed comes in, that greed makes you act in a very, very different way. You can't work normal. See, you can't work normal. You can see the person going right down, but you can't see your business getting affected. One person came here, said, "No, I left that company, I'm doing my own work. Something a little bit different, like cold drinks and all that, you know. So I'm doing something, I'm doing an energy drink." Now that Allah was doing that thing is taking very well. That company got to know that I'm doing energy drinks, and I'm doing well, so they gave me litigation, court letters now. We're not supposed to be doing this, and this name is resembling our name, and will affect, you know, affect our business. He's crying. But it's the only thing I got to do, but they're shutting me down. So they're not worried that person dies, or whatever happens. That business of this will just flow. This is greed. What happens, what it does. Islam is not from this. Free enterprise, no monopoly. Free enterprise and no monopoly. Now, how they work, same thing is when it's greed, when you become a victim of greed, what happens? Now, for example, just for example, you are cement, right? Your cement is going throughout the country, right? Now, he imported his own cement, for example, from Pakistan, half the price. So when he's got it, you're selling for 100 rand, he's selling for 50 rands. So when you discover that he's selling for 50 rands, and the strength is equal to yours, so you brought your cement to 30 rands. Now he can't afford it, because he's new. He can't afford it. So now he has to just close down. When you close down, so you bought him off, and you are selling your cement at 100 rands, I'm selling 150 rands. See, you lost there, but now quickly you're covering up. This is a very vicious cycle, see. So Islam is talking for free enterprise, no monopoly. And this greed market is talking about monopoly and cornering the market. We must just corner the market. Nobody, we don't have any competitor. We will call our price, we'll do what we want. We don't want any competitor on the market. So this greed makes you do some several stupid things, right? Someone passed away, so you're not worried about money is going to the person respectively, correctly. My interest in this, what is my interest and how must I do it? I know in Springer Beach some many years ago, so the man passed away and the son-in-law is jumping. We need to have this. But I said, is it your money or your wife's? So, whatever is my wife's, mine's also. So it was the wife's thing and he's jumping. He's jumping so much. He wants more than his share. His share that time, somewhere about 30 years ago now. So his share was about 50,000 and he wanted 250,000. But you see how it turns your mind. This greed. What is mine is mine, but what is yours also is mine. See, what is mine is mine, but what is yours, if I can lay my hands, that is also mine. Now, what Islam is teaching you? Contentment. Be content, simple living. Allah will see to you as well. Allahu yarzukukum wa iyyahum. He'll see to you, he'll see to them. Now, you don't have to jump like that. Now, up to now, I see that man coming. He's old now. But then I lost the respect. You could lose. It's such a thing. So, we're talking of Hazrat Shah Abdul Qadir Sahib, rahmatullahi alayhi. And he made a promise with Allah Ta'ala. He sees that kuch mangenge nahi. Now, the second person came to study here. When the second person came to study, so he's sharing the bread with the second person. See how Islam, what it does to the person. And minus Islam, what it does to you. You steal, you rob, interest, fraud, speak lies, run away, escape. A lot of things you do. And when you put Islam, the right spirit of Islam, then the little is also too much. The little that you're eating is too much. Now the third student came in. The third student came in to Shah Abdul Qadir Sahib, tells the third student, what you stick around here, and we'll try and readjust the remuneration. Remuneration was the roti. So what we'll ask the person to do is give us that equivalent amount of atta. We won't take the roti, we'll take the flour. So we'll take the flour, dilute it in water nicely and add some salt and three of us will share. But you see now what Islam will make the person do. What was supposed to be for one is now sufficing three people. And all three of them are comfortable. In the meanwhile, the winter is coming. Shah Sahib said, no, I made a promise to Allah Ta'ala that I'm not going to ask anybody for any help. Now, see, there's so much of barakat in that life. Your studies is barakat, there's more in that, so much of acceptance in that life. So the winters came, and this Delhi is on the belt of the Himalayas. So the winter becomes very intense. Now what to do, how to save yourself? You made a promise with Allah Ta'ala, I'm not going to take anything from anybody. But now the winter is so intense, what do I do? So what I would do, up to the time I was studying in India, there was a boiler to the masjid, made of steel, and you fill it up with coal or you fill it up with wood. The thing boils the water. You want to make wuzu, you take the water from there, add some plain water, and make wuzu. You have a jug for making wuzu. Now, the boiler is to heat the water. So, the thing would remain hot until that wood doesn't burn out. So after Isha, just to keep myself warm, I'm sitting at the boiler. But people don't know what's the problem. They think, or some people, they just like to be near the fire. So therefore they're keeping themselves warm. And my problem, I don't have anything to cover myself. And the cold is so intense. In Delhi, you see, look at the papers. Come the winter season, there's so many deaths. They don't have enough clothing, etc., to keep themselves warm, so many deaths. So the heat, the cold is so intense. So I'll keep myself warm, like that. And then when that fire is gone, it'll burn, right, for 1 hour or something, and then it'll finish. So when that is gone, then I'll come into the masjid, close the doors. There they don't have musalla like we have. We have carpets, they don't have the carpets. They have chatais. You know, if you go to the deck of the masjid, the chatai, straw mat. So, this is, I will roll myself on the straw mat from one end of the masjid to the other end of the masjid. So the center of the body will be warm, but the feet and the head will be catching it. But now, I manage this right. And the hadith says that if you don't show your needs to anybody, right, don't show your needs to anybody, right, only for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, then Allah Ta'ala will grant you 1 year of halal rizq. But the shart is don't show your need to anybody, not straight and not alluding. Now, I finished that now. My studies were over. When my studies were over, Shahadu Qadha Sahib says, it was in India a long time ago, about 150 years ago, right? And things were very simple, and there was no communication at that time, phones, all that, nothing. Now that phone, all that was just for a very wealthy person, extremely wealthy person, he could afford a phone. A normal person can't afford a phone. So you find like in one town, two or three people got phones. So you want to make an urgent call, so if you go to him, and he will link you up and you pay him, right? I saw that in India. Nobody got phones. It's a place now, like Dioban, and there's already got 5 phones. You need to make an urgent call, go to him, paying something, 100 rupees or whatever, and you can make the call. Right? Now everybody got it. How will Allah change that thing? So, I did my studies. Now, after the studies, it was like a standard exam. Many students after that, but all, many students felt now, we did our academic side, you know, academic we have done it, but now, whatever we learned, we need to get the application right. We got the word, right? We understood the word. But have we got the act, the application, the deed, have we got it? The word is not a guarantee that you got the deed. That you learned, for example, about money, right? You see, the formula for making money is maximum wealth in least time, at least effort, and without any type of implications, no legal implications, maximum wealth. But now that you know the formula, then you become wealthy, what? You have to work your whole life to get that money. So the same now, you know that you got the word. Now, have you got the application? Well, you heard about Ikhlas now, have you got it? You heard about Quran Sharif, have you got it? You know about having a clean heart, not having any malice, now have you got it? You know about not having show and ostentation, so just reading it, have you got it? So now you have to work your life to see that you get these values. Like I said, in wealth, you got the formula, but that doesn't give you the wealth. Here too, you got the formula. It doesn't mean you got the formula, now you got that as well. So, now in that age, it was such that people will look for mashayikh. Considerable, not all, but a considerable amount of people will go and stay by some buzhug, learn now. Or we learn this thing, you know. Now how do we apply this? So, Brother Shahadu Qadir Sahib Rahmatullahi, I said that time, there's no communications. So you just hear someone popular and famous and you will go up to him. because of his popularity. Now I have to get this thing done. So the first call was made to Maulana Ahmad Raza Khan. The first call. Well, he was there. So the person coming for some work, he must be focused on his work. If you're coming for Islam, then be focused on Islam. Then don't get involved in other affairs. So they also focus on their work. I came to learn, and I need to see. See, I came for some work, and I must get it right. So my work was, one is Ataliq. The youngsters that were there, I needed to oversee them, teach them, correct them, all that. Number two, sometimes there were fatawas and all that, then I had to oversee. So, whilst looking at the fatawa, I noticed that Mullah Ahmad al-Zakhan had made a mistake. So I brought it to his attention that this was not right. So, and I showed him the reference, whether it was in Kanz or Hidayah or whatever, I showed him the reference of that. So he said, no, what you're saying is right, but the prisoner is my friend, you know. If I'm going to show him the right masla, he will suffer a financial loss. He's my friend, I'm going to show him the right masla, then he'll suffer. So I just showed him things so he doesn't suffer a loss. Now, he said, hey, that shook me up, no? And that happened now, and my confidence broke. That here, the maslas can be adjusted for friends. What? Wrong can be made right for the convenience of friends. So this shook me up, and I didn't make a noise, didn't tell him anything. Discreetly, respectfully, I just went to him. See, there's a lot of things to learn from this Buzurganadi. How they worked, and what was their habits, their mannerisms, their style, what was it. Then I'm thinking to myself, now who's the next person that's known or popular in India? That's not the undivided India, okay? India, Pakistan was one at the time, see. So the next person that was quite popular at the time was Ghulam Ahmad Qadiani. So I went up to him. So Ghulam Ahmad Qadiani told me, he said, don't rush. Keep making the dua, ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. Allah will guide us to the right path. I stayed there not even one day. I say, I'd seen myself in knee-deep sewage. Knee-deep sewage. Some things were not seen straight, and I saw this as well. They also have to just move away. I respectfully has moved away from there. Until then, I logged on to Hazrat Mawla Abdul Rahim Sahib, like Puri Rahmatullahi. Then I came here. So Mawla Abdul Rahim Sahib, their style is different now. See, they will refer some other Buzurgan Adin. They won't just take you straight away. So for several reasons. One is because of the humility, right? See, there's other great people, why are you coming here? Number two is that this path requires that when you log on to one, then log on very firmly. Your mind must be clear, and your trust in the person also must be 110%, not 100%, 110%. Whatever he's going to say, then my mind will take it straight away. Then I won't have any reservation and any unclarity. My mind will be absolutely clear. So you put him through a little bit of a trial, and then you see now he's standing up to the trial, then you accept him. You just want to take numbers like that, and you didn't do the trial, then small thing, you'll have a hitch again, one hitch, another hitch, especially now when you take an alim on. So his mind was very clear. So, Al-Mawlana Rahim Sahib told me, there's great people like Mawlana Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, I'm referring to him. You also join up there. So now he's made up his mind. So see, for people like you, it's great people. Like a small person for me, like myself, my port of call, my sanctuary, my safety is you. I can't look right, I can't look left, I look at you only. So he stayed there now. He stayed there, and here again there's difficulties. The food that was served was some type of a mealy bread, right? Now that mealy bread was not being done well. So I'm thinking to myself, must I speak to the cook or not? Because it's creating a lot of stomach problems. And now he went for his islas, his reformation, correction. And he's thinking to himself that now that mealy bread is not done right. Not done right, it's creating problems. The worms coming out from my stomach like this, so big, you know. Worms coming out, that's a lot of stomach problems. So, but this thing carried on. So one day I plucked the courage to go and speak to the cook. That you see, the bread, that mealy bread, you are doing it from the outside, and from the inside is not done, and it's creating problems. Can you just keep it a little bit more, so that it's right? So the cook got irritated. The cooks have a little bit of a, see, they're standing on the stove all the time. So, sohbat ka asar. See, heat now. They get heat also, heated very quickly. I was in Nyasram now. So, one day I went to compliment the cook. MashaAllah, you did very well. He got angry. Say, what do you mean? All that is also doing right. So they can be a little bit temperamental. So the cook got very angry with me. He says, you want to look like a king, go home. So I said, I'm not going to refill this closet because others may say, see, I can't afford anything else. And your health is taking a knock. So you rather do something else for your health, you see. So I just stuck there. With all that difficulty and pain, for which I appeared 1-2 years, I need to stay there, I just stayed there. But I'm showing you now what was the temperament, the mindset in the studying. And then here, now you get people like Hazrat Mawlana Ali Mia Sahab, Mawlana Manzoor Ahmad Nomani Sahab, Qasim Abdul Qadir Sahab, Bahadur Wahab Sahab, they all linked up to the Shah Abdul Qadir Sahab. But you see the mujahada, the sacrifice that they went through, right? And they stuck, they endured, they didn't complain. They endured, then it was the time to fruit, what fruit Allah blessed them with. Time is up now.